Hey everybody, welcome to Just for Variety. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Today is April 5th, 2023. On this week's show, I'm talking to Dove Cameron. The star of Schmigadoon talks the show's second season, why she made two music videos for her hit single Breakfast, and if she's ready or not ready for Broadway. Cameron, who identifies as queer, also opened up about the recent increase in anti-LGBTQ legislation and rhetoric, and why she has gone public about her very private mental health struggles. But before we get to Ms. Cameron, let's take a look at this week's Just for Variety column. Melanie Lynskey wants to return to The Last of Us. Only problem is, as fans of the HBO series know, her ruthless resistance group leader character Kathleen was killed off at the end of the first season. If they wanted to go back and do an origin story, I would be there for it, Lynskey tells me. The story of how this woman got into this crazy position would be really interesting. Lynskey admits she knew nothing about The Last of Us video game before she was approached about the project. I've never played a video game, she says. My thumbs don't work that way. I didn't even play Atari. I was reading books. I was reading D.H. Lawrence when I was a child. She jokes it was her husband, Jason Ritter, who convinced her to take the part. He said, "You have to do it. No questions asked," Lynskey recalls. I was like, "But I'm tired." He was like, "I don't care." Read more of Just for Variety in this week's magazine or online at variety.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Just for Variety. I'm talking to Dove Cameron. The 27-year-old actor and singer first rose to fame as a Disney Channel star for her title roles on Liv and Maddie. She went on to star in the Descendants franchise. Now Cameron returns for the second season of Schmigadoon as Jenny Banks, a character in honor of Sally Bowles from Cabaret. In other words, Dove Cameron is giving really good Liza Minnelli. At the same time, Cameron has become a bona fide pop star. Her single Boyfriend has become an out and proud queer anthem, and her more recent release, Breakfast, is a rallying cry for women's rights. Here's Dove Cameron.
Hi, Dove.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm better now, looking at you.
Oh, you're too sweet. You're too sweet. Listen. You have been busy. Every time I go online, there you are, Jimmy Fallon. Then you're doing Drew Barrymore. Then you're doing a performance here, a performance there. Obviously, we have a lot to talk about, but let's just start off with, and I've been practicing how to say it, Schmigago.
Yeah.
Did I say it right?
Yes, you did. You're one of the few. It's so funny. Even the cast and I for season one, we would catch ourselves being like Schmigadoon, like Schmigadoon. Like it's a bit of a, it's not strong branding, but it's been like so amazing to be able to finally talk about season two, because it felt like a century ago that we filmed it.
What is amazing about it, because I'm such a theater queen, is when I'm watching you, I watched the first two episodes, and I watched that number you do in the, I think it's in the dressing room or in the hotel room. I'm like, is that Liza Minnelli?
Like, oh my God, that's the biggest compliment in the world.
But it sounds like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, this is a song from Cabaret. I'm like, wait a minute, no, it's not.
Yeah.
that's what's so magical about the music. And I know it's the same thing with the first season, but Cabaret is so, I mean, it's just.
I've been saying it's like hallowed ground for so many of us, right? Like it was a transformative, very like education awakening for so many of us, like, especially, you know, I'm sure you can relate, but like growing up as a queer person and seeing, I only had access to the film until I got older, but just seeing like the queer representation in an environment that was also, you know, so sexually liberated, those two things coupled together were really healing and like necessary to see growing up for me to become the person that I was. And I know for so many other people, they feel the same. So it's like a really magical kind of fun, you know, thing that we get to play in this season.
But it's fascinating how the music sounds like we know it.
I know it's wild. The cast and I still like marvel about that because Cinco and our incredible team of writers somehow toe the line between, you know, making it reminiscent of these things that live in our bodies and our nervous system, but also while bringing light and levity to things. Cause you know, the world of Schmigadoon is so, it's so tongue in cheek. And so like nudge, nudge, wink, wink. It's very like an inside joke with the audience. So it's amazing to me how they can manage to pay homage and yet like bring a sort of a self-awareness to it that doesn't step on the original source material. It's kind of wild.
Yeah. It's, I don't know if this is the right phrasing. I don't think this is the right phrasing. I'm going to try. It's like a respectful parody. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The way that I've been sort of looking at it is like, you know, when you poke fun at your best friend, it's like all of the things that you love so much about them, but you're gonna like take them down a peg or two because you love them. It's like that. It's like with love. But it's also, it's like with deep reverence, but also like, you know, we're making our entire show about these musicals. Like it's deeply love-based.
So when you're shooting Schmigadoon, Chicago, obviously you're performing now on stage, you're performing, you know, your own music, but is there a part of you that says, you know, I need to go back to Broadway. I want to be on Broadway. I want to star in an original musical, or I want to do Cabaret.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think if I could do Cabaret every night, that would be, I mean, just a dream come true. I went to go see Aaron the other night in Moulin Rouge because he only has a few weeks left. Mm-hmm. And I just, my mouth was agape. I was like, I need to figure out how to get back to the 8-show-a-week schedule. Like, first of all, that's something that I'm not sure I have the gusto for right now. Like, I'm kind of on my last leg. Like, I found out I have a lot more legs than I thought I had, but I'm on the last one. So I would need to seriously prepare, you know, lock myself in a cabin in the mountains for a few weeks to just get my blood going again. But definitely, I mean, stage is always something that, it's so magical. It's so singular. It's so community-based. It's so ephemeral. And there's nothing else these days that it's sort of like the last frontier for, you know, the sort of like human connection meets art, like in the current moment. Like there's everything else we can get on demand and whenever we want it and at the tip of our fingers, like all the time. And stage work and live performing, like touring your own music, is just one of the last morsels of like real human magic that has persevered hundreds of years. And so it's definitely like it'll never leave me, but I don't think I'm qualified right now. It sounds like the Olympics to me. I'm like,
do not sell yourself short. Who on the cast did you get closest with? I mean, I imagine you want to pick everyone's brains. There are all these Broadway veterans sitting there, but who did you bond with the most?
Well, it was actually different from season one to season two. Season one was really isolative because it was still at the height of COVID. We were one of the only shows that was trying to figure out how to get through it. And so there were a bunch of people that if I wasn't in the scene with them, I just didn't speak to them. Like Aaron and I have this joke where it's like, I feel like I finally met him in season two. Like he knocked on my door and he was like, hey. And I was like, hi, I'm Dove. But I definitely, I think that the great thing about this cast is that these are all, of course, like you said, veterans and geniuses and icons. But they're also the most normal, lovely people you've ever met in your life. Like, there's just not a single person that I don't feel familial with. And I think season one for me, I got definitely closest with Alan, which was, I kept being like, I do not understand. Like, if there are gods, they're smiling upon me. I was like, Alan is my hero. And I mean, talk about cabaret legend. Right. And so that was so important for me, especially as like a young queer person, just like having him in my life as like my queer, you know, fairy godfather. Was so
mother.
my queer fairy god human. But yeah, he's become someone really special in my life outside of the show. And then I feel like I definitely got closest with Aaron this season. I was really close with Keegan from last season as well. But I think Aaron, I now consider to be a friend outside the show. Like in terms of like, because when you're working with people, you always have the intention of seeing them outside the show. But then everybody's here and somebody's there and somebody has a kid and somebody gets married. It's just like, you know, trying to herd sheep, trying to get people together. But I feel like I've really, you know, in my life transferred Alan and Aaron. And but yeah, everybody's amazing.
So let's talk about your music you're working on. It, when I hear you say, oh, I'm working on my first album, I'm like,
huh? Yeah,
because you've had these hits, you've had such a presence now.
Thank you.
What kind of pressure do you feel though to deliver an album that lives up to these singles that you've released?
Huge pressure. I mean, like, keep you up at night kind of pressure. I'm not gonna lie, because you know, Boyfriend was really one of the first songs I like sat down to write ever. And like with any intention of putting it on a body of work that is like not kind of like just fucking around. And when that happens like that, when you like sit down and you're like, bleh, and it just like accidentally just takes off and changes your whole career, you're like, I don't even know how I did that. I don't even know how that happened. It was just like a total accident. And then obviously Breakfast came next and that, you know, did fairly well. And I think it's just all I'm really thinking about right now is making sure that I'm excited by it. Like if it's something that I wake up and I'm like, I want to hear that. I want to get into a headspace via that song or these collections of songs, or it makes me want to, you know, like shave my head or something, you know, shave my head and commit myself to, you know, like a totally new lifestyle. Then like, that's the kind of music that I want to be making. And then as long as you're in love with it, I think that supersedes an external validation sort of mental space.
Okay.
Because like I've had other songs that I put out that didn't do as well as those two. And there've been some where I was like, yeah, that one really wasn't my favorite and it didn't connect. That's the worst. But when you go, I love that song and I don't care how it did because I listened to that song and I think it smacks, then you actually, you sort of skip over the whole like, oh, it didn't connect, it didn't really do what we wanted it to do, because you love it. And if you're not creating for yourself, you're really creating for no one.
And your song, you know, Breakfast, obviously, Boyfriend, have messages. You watch those videos. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Breakfast video is so genius.
Thank you.
It's like, I was thinking about it earlier today. It's like Handmaid's Tale upside down.
Yeah, totally. Thank you. Thanks.
You know, and it's you presented it in such a fresh way of that trying to think of if gender expectations and roles and stereotypes were reversed, but you presented it in such a fresh way, in such a new contemporary way, because we've seen it before, but you were able to just. It's I always try to describe music and I'm not a music critic, but it's like, it's alarming
Yeah.
when you see you in the soup, but then there's this like almost soothing ballad to it all. It's the fucked up of it all is really good.
Thank you. Yeah. So I was actually, I flew back in the middle of season two to do that video. So what basically had happened was I filmed another music video for Breakfast First before I left for Vancouver. It was like good, you know, it was very like sexy, pop girly, like, you know, something. It was just a video. It was like adequate. And I liked it. And we were kind of working on the edit. And then the news of Roe v. Wade broke and I was in Canada. And I was just feeling so desolate. Like I hadn't felt that low in a while, where I was just like, I have no hope or faith in our government. I have no hope or faith that like I felt like my sort of universal worldview really should, like, you know, there are so many things that happen in the world that are like little pickaxes to your worldview. And for me, I feel like the Roe v. Wade conversation that was ongoing for so long, it so felt like one step forward, five steps back. Like it was just this kind of perpetual thing. And then when it finally broke, I, like so many other people, women, people who love women, non-binary people, everybody who's affected by this, which is truly everyone, I was feeling like I just didn't want to get out of bed. I was just like, I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to talk to anybody. How am I going to be a good actor today? How am I going to, I was just feeling really, it was heavy. It was weighing heavy on me. And my mom actually flew out because I struggle with depression like so many people do. And I was starting to feel like that familiar dark cloud thing where, you know, when it's creeping back up and you're like, no, you're like, not right now. I need to work. And, and so I was like, mom, I actually think I really need you out here. Like I'm a full blown adult, but I was like, I think I really need somebody out here.
Yeah.
So my mom flew out and my label was trying to get me to approve all of these videos. And I was like, I could not make myself care about anything except for what was going on, in Congress and with women. And so my label was like, what are we going to do to get Dove to respond, essentially? And I was like, guys, I don't know what to tell you. I know we have a deadline. I know we have to get this song out, but I just feel like music and music videos, it doesn't matter right now. Like, why aren't we talking about everything that's actually going on? And they were like, well, would you want to reshoot it and make something that reflects how you're feeling right now? And I said, you would do that for me? Like, that's really expensive. And they were like, yeah, if you can get Apple to agree to fly you back home, we'll make the music video that you want to work on that feels like what you're feeling right now, that really represents your current headspace. So that's what we did. And I feel like when I'm in conversation with people who are not sympathetic to someone who, the people who are discussing anyone's rights as though it's like a debate, right? Like the people who are like, well, let's think about the finer points of, and you're like, if ever I'm talking to someone like that, I always find that like my instinct is to be like, what if it was you? Like it's, you really are so in the weeds of it. You're really so in the details of it that you can't see it from a universal human standpoint in the way that it is a human rights issue. And so we just wanted to flip it and to sort of show men, or people who are in support of, you know, banning, women's control over their bodies, how ridiculous it really is, how much of a double standard it really is, and give them the emotional experience of how trapping it feels to be a woman in modern society.
Ooh. When are you going to run for office?
Right now. New day.
No. We're going to take a short break right now, but when we return, Cameron opens up about mental health and why she's been so public about her very private struggles. We'll be right back.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Just for Variety. I'm Mark Malkin. Here's more of Dove Cameron.
Were you always, I mean, the word, it's political. It's being outspoken. Where'd you find your voice? Or how did you find your voice?
I don't know. I think I was I've always been pretty like justice oriented. Like I'm one of those people where I'm like, if I'm playing a board game and somebody cheats, it like irrationally upsets me. Like I'm always like, and they're like, it's a game. And I'm like, there's a right and there's a wrong. Like I'm very much one of those people that's like, I just get really hung up on like fairness issues or like, you know, anything that's relating to like selfishness or self-interest or like anything that feels like a double standard or anything like that. Like I've always been, I was a really sort of passionate kid about issues like that, where I was like, this seems unbalanced. And so for me, I don't actually think of it as political to be interested in like human rights issues and things where things are technically, yes, being, you know, there's policy, people are voting. It's, you know, obviously it's in politics, but I don't view it to be isolatively political. Mm-hmm. I view it as like caring about human beings. And I actually think that if you put the cap of like democracy or politics over something, it turns people off as though it's like, not dinner table conversation. Right. And it's like, no, dude, like this is super fucking simple. Here are the issues at hand. Here's what's happening and here's what you can do about it or not. And when you side over here, this is the consequence and whatever. And then it's like, if you don't make it feel like something inaccessible to people, and you're like, I still think that so many people, maybe Gen Z less, but I feel like a lot of people really before the Trump, he who shall not be named of it all, showed up on the scene, really though that generation was sort of like, more so than Gen Z, I think, because everybody feels like everything's blowing up and the world is dying. And they're like, you know, red button. Right. But I feel like that generation was more like, politics, like it's so complicated. And and like, I grew up that way, right? Like it was just sort of like, it was on in the radio, but it was like for adults and like intellectuals. And I feel like now it's just like dire. It should be as fundamental as like, we don't need to learn cursive. We don't need to learn cursive in schools. We need to learn about democracy and politics at like the age of five.
On a more personal level, your post in May talking about depression, dysphoria, so powerful.
Thanks.
Talking about trying to use this very seemingly inhumane vehicle of social media and to sort of heal yourself. Did you find it healing by putting it out there?
I think yes and no. I'm pretty upfront with myself every day about my mental health. Mm-hmm. I don't actually have the mechanism of like shutting it down or blocking it off, which I think is a good thing in the long run, but sometimes it can be an inconvenience. Yeah. So I never have an issue with like, oh, I have to face this. I'm like constantly facing it. So for me, it was less to do with like, I need to talk about this, and more to do with like, I'm always talking about it. And I think that I have a really hard time translating my real life experience onto social media, because if I'm present in the moment, I'm just not capturing it. And the people who are around me are not capturing it. And you know what it feels like to have, I feel like some people are really good about like, if you look at their page, it's like, I know who you are. That's what it's like to have dinner with you. This is who you are with your friends. And like, I get your little isms, and I'm not that way. I don't know if it's because I'm a Capricorn. I don't know what it is, but Capricorns are the best, honey. But I don't know what it is. I think people just, I think it might be because when I'm like working, I'm in work mode. And then usually what people see is my work. And then when people speak to me, they're like, oh, you're actually like kind of funny and nice to talk to. And I was like, fuck me, dude. Like I have to just maybe put more of myself onto this platform, because it's really not like it's not a great dissonance to have, where people like think you're one thing and then you're a completely different person. And I didn't curate it that way. I actually can't figure out how to not do that. But I just wanted to kind of like also remind people that, I think the whole taboo of mental health is really confusing, because I don't know one person where when you talk to them about your struggles isn't like, oh my God, me too. And so it's kind of like group agreement where we all kind of like wrote a secret note and threw it in the fire. And we said never to speak about it again. It's like, why? Why? And listen, I understand also, like, if you don't feel comfortable talking about your mental health, that's a totally different story. Like, no one should make you talk about anything that you do not want to speak about. But I don't agree with the social construct of having mental health be like this wild, inappropriate thing to talk about. It's like, isn't that the one thing that we all undoubtedly have in common? And if we talked about it, wouldn't it just like alleviate so much of like the muscle tension?
It's listen, I'm in recovery. So, you know, recovery, you know, we talk about talking to someone else in recovery, and it's literally verbalizing it.
Yeah.
Getting it out. You know, sometimes that means writing it. But, you know, when I read your post, you know, obviously I'm older than you, and I, you know, I came of age at the time when, no, you didn't talk about mental health. You know, my family was, it was all secrets.
Yes.
All secrets.
Totally.
And it's the biggest cliche, and they're cliches for a reason, but secrets will kill you. Literally and figuratively.
Isn't that the whole what you resist persists? It's just like, and I also sort of feel like this doesn't make any scientific sense. So don't, they're going to be like, that's not real. And it's not. But I imagine it's sort of like if there was like one energetic like molecule in your body of like something unprocessed, it just like slowly attracts like, and it just like builds and grows like a mold. And I'm also the first person to be like, my openness about my mental health does not mean that everybody can just ask me whatever they want. It doesn't mean that, right? It also doesn't then mean that I am going to share everything about my mental health. Like maybe one day, but it's not, you know, it's the same thing about like trying to predict someone's sexual orientation or how they identify. Like that's something that you leave to that person. But I do believe in like leading by example and hopefully creating like a safe dialogue to be like, this is where I'm at right now. I made a point in that post to say, I don't have a conclusion, right? Like I'm talking about dysphoria without being like, and now this like stamp, right. I just wanted to open up a dialogue about sort of an ongoing conversation I'm having with myself in hopes that somebody would be like, oh, okay. Because me too. And it's been confusing. And I'm glad to see that someone else is speaking about it publicly so that like I can feel like I can access it more. Because again, you know, I think that I'm also a huge, my father took his own life. And so suicide has been a big part of my life for a long time. And I'm very much in the camp of like you said, secrets will kill you. And I think that the more that you believe you have to play a role for other people, or you cannot live as yourself, or you have no like outlet for the pain to find its way out, it never ends well. It never ends well. So I make it like a very personal kind of crusade to attempt to give people permission and safety to talk about where they're at, while also making it clear that I'm a safe space, but not every space is safe. So like, you know, you, at your own discretion.
Right. Sure. What do you say to queer youth, not even youth, even adults, who right now feel hopeless, who are frightened and scared of watching this legislation that is being pushed throughout the country? It is, you know, it is the more visibility the queer community gets, the more pushback.
Yeah.
Which is what I believe is happening. What do you say to those kids out there? Or like I said, adults, any queer person who's, you know, is scared, is frightened.
I mean, right now it's a particularly, I'm in conversation with a lot of my trans friends and a lot of my non-binary friends, anybody who walks around visibly as a potential target to someone and who is feeling actively unsafe every day because of how they identify and how they present and all of these things. And I'm listening to them, speak about, you know, struggling with like, do I hide myself? Do I hide who I am? Like, how do I keep myself safe when I feel so unsafe? Like there's only so much one can do. And so much of it is so violent and so hateful and so irrational, really, that I would love to say, I feel incredibly hopeful and everything's going to be fine. But I think that it's a very, very scary time right now. I think that all we can do is try to find, you know, as much community as we possibly can, and know that, like, try to sort of batten down the mental hatches of our minds, and know that, because even if we feel fully healed and in both feet in our queer identity, I think it is nearly impossible to not feel even a little bit affected by the sort of like nauseating vitriol that is coming at us every day. And like, even I have that little bit of like that, like tiny shame bug that comes up, like, I am wrong. And then you have to be like, whoa, this is pervasive. Like, this is, it's really, and again, I think like the feeling of not wanting to be affected by it is noble, but I think it's also unreasonable. Like, I think that it's a dark time. I think it's very scary. And I think that the best we can do is sort of be kind to ourselves, speak to our like young queer inner child about like all the work that we have done, hopefully find queer community, try to like be, because I was even thinking about this the other day. I was talking to one of my trans friends, and it's like, who are we to ask our trans friends to be more visible than ever right now? Right. Because it's like, they're terrified. Like, what are we going to do? Ask them to be the face of something that they're also suffering, right? Like, you can't just go out and like represent fearlessly when you yourself are afraid. That's an unreasonable ask. And so I think we're all going to have to figure it out together. I also would just say, you know, the age old truth, which is like, hate is just like fear in a big, scary coat. These people are so afraid of what they don't understand, of what breaks their brain, of what feels outside of the confines of like, I've seen people, I've had conversations with people try to wrap their minds around gender identity, you know, transitioning, even just being attracted to the same gender, like really base level. And they can't do it. Like, some people just can't make their brains go there. But instead of embracing it and being like, you know, listen, I don't understand, but that's fine. And you, to each their own. It's like, they have this sort of animal instinct to like lash out. And I think that that's really what we're facing right now, is like the sort of like all the progress we've made in the queer community has also brought out a lot of sort of death rattle screams, is what I'm hoping it is. Death rattle screams from the sort of more conservative, hateful side. But I would just like say like a little mantra to yourself every day, like, they're reacting this way because they are afraid. It is not more powerful than our love, than our warmth, than our light. It's not more powerful. It's just louder sometimes. And find your community and know that you are not made wrong. I guess that's all I would say.
Well, that's pretty good, Dove. And I wish we could keep talking, but I know you have to go. This was amazing.
You're amazing.
We're going to chat some more, I'm sure. And just keep living your truth, because it's... And I will say this to every queer artist, and I know people sit there like, oh, roll their eyes at me or whatever, but you're saving lives.
I don't think that's not eye roll. That's very true.
You are saving lives by living your truth.
You make me cry.
but there's someone out there who's looking at you and watching you and hearing you saying, that could be me, and I'm going to be okay. So
it's true. Awesome. It's true. I listen, you're saving lives. we're all one big team, interconnected. Interconnected through brain, body, mind, spirit.
That was Dove Cameron, and that's it for this week's Just for Variety. Thanks for listening. Coming up next week, Mark Consuelos. Just days before he's set to replace Ryan Seacrest as co-host of his wife Kelly Ripa's longtime talk show, Consuelos opens up about the new job, his acting career, and more. Until next time, make sure to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mark Malkin. And for all breaking and exclusive Hollywood news, go to Variety.com. See you next time.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.